Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on Facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbisn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
I got on to, everything was set up today. I had so many calamities around my house this week that hopefully I didn't damage my arm, which was surgically implanted with an electronic device for my heart a couple of weeks ago. But tonight I had everything prepared because this week has been a hell week for me because I had a little bit of an overflowing shower that came down to the two-story townhome, came down to my second floor. Well, I got an industrial Sylvie's. I solved the problem. I got this. It didn't kill the, and so the plasterboard's wet. Not good. You can get all sorts of mold, and you got to dry it out, so I didn't know what to do. You know, it's leaking down from, apparently I left some clothes in the shower and it overflowed. I had about 20 minutes, so it flooded a little bit downstairs. So I got a dehumidifier from Home Depot. Big thing, it sucks all the moisture out, worked wonderfully. And then I got these two big fans that I hooked up to the certain light fixtures and the other areas where I could blow air into this area above my ceiling and below the floor, which is dying it out. And I bought anti-mold chemicals, so that I'll spray that in once it's all dried out, and I've been running it for 2 days. So I've been in it like a chicken without a head. And I put together the broadcast, had it done today, and as I'm getting on to airtime, I had set up this program that you now see and sent out emails to everyone and all that good stuff. And in about 5 minutes, I had my dinner and was relaxing, doing research about the broadcast tonight, which I'll get into. And all of a sudden, I get in, and there's a special way you have to put in, the ID and the code, right, password to get into the studio online that you can manage this broadcast. So I'm looking there, and I put in, and now if you get one wrong, and if you do it three times, it's going to kick you out. Well, I kept putting it in, and I watched to make sure I got every letter right. This name, that name, and then the code. I can't get on. So I called the program manager, Kim, and about 3 minutes to airtime, and tell her I can't get in. Now, she right away assumes, especially since she knows I'm brain injured, that the likelihood that I might make a mistake is not unusual. But I assured her that that was not the case. So sure enough, she gets back on her computer, which she wasn't on, I'm sure, and runs there, and we're talking, and she gets on. So if it was the three outs, she strikes you out, you are, she wouldn't have been able to get in, but she did. So then we're all on the phone. I'm looking for airtime, and sure enough, we're talking. We're talking some current events. We both agree we don't like the news, which is what I'm not going to try to bum you all about, except relevant to how we survive, and I'll have some goodies, too, other than the bad stuff. You'll get your vegetables first, you'll eat them, and then I'll give you some desserts, okay? But on what we're going to present tonight. But you got to do the first in order to get the other goodies on the two. But what I did was, so I'm going to get there. In the middle of the conversation, as we're talking, I'm looking. I says, I'm not on air. I got to call in. Well, it took me a while to get settled because I'm scramble brain. I'm still paying attention to the dehydration that the dehumidifier is doing in my downstairs and checking all my fans that are blowing in my house, ready to put the cap. I'm going to keep the thing for a week just to make sure I dry this out because I don't want the mold. And I'm going to pump it with enough chemicals. I'll probably be green or be very inebriated, one or the other. But anyway, so that's the story on my class. So sure enough, I panicked. And I was a little late, so if you waited there and saw it, now you know the reason why. And I was quite uncomfortable and nervous, but then I just said, look, just call the number, get it right, just do it. If they want to see the program and it's dead air for a minute, they'll just have to deal with it. Anyway, now on to the broadcast. Again, it's Corona, 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 and checks. I did say checks, too. That's going to be the benefit. Because there's two different things. One is the stimulus check, which is relevant to a large portion of our community out there who are brain injured, a lot of people on strokes, elderly people connected with Social Security or still working where they have to get the stimulus checks, and not everyone's on the ball and gets them right away. I got mine. And then there's another one. I will talk about that after the Corona stuff. And then there's the other thing, a little benefit program that I've run into, which is just based on your income, which is good for, again, covers our audience. It's a program, a fund, in which you'll be able to get your co-pays at the drugstore paid for. Now, if a lot of you are on medications that can cost a fortune, as I am, this is a great advice. Instead of spending $80 a month, it picks up that if you're qualified for it, and it covers a wide range of ailments, huge amount. And it's called the PAN or PAN Foundation, and I'm going to introduce it to the audience here. And as an addition to that, there's another program within the PAN Foundation in which for certain qualified individuals, they can get rides to their medical insurance, and I'll tell you, rides to their medical appointments, not insurance, excuse me, it's like an insurance, and I'll tell you why. About 2 weeks ago, I had a medical procedure, and I hope with all the activity I've done this week with putting in these air things and stuff using the fans and creating plastic tubes to taping them onto the areas so that the air can blow into these vents and I can make sure that I dry out my drywall and inside and stuff, is I had defibrillator, and it has a pain. This thing does everything. It has a defibrillator. They can even speed up my heart. I don't like that. You know, who knows? For all I know, the government's spying on me. I don't know what they'd find, but it could be. They might be tracing me now. There's probably some geek with a computer screen that's watching me, knowing what I'm thinking, when I'm breathing, if my blood pressure goes up, who knows? You know, but I'm not a conspiracy theorist or a paranoid, but you do think that. But anyway, so I had that put in. And the funny thing is, I had a cousin of mine who was willing to come down. She lives up in the northern part of the state, about 90 miles away. She said, oh, I'll take it. Okay. She's a nurse, so it's really good. I like having her around for that. And she has three wonderful kids, which is a wonderful thing. But I didn't want to drag her down so she'd be waiting 6 hours, you know, in a lobby or in a parking lot. So what I did is I said, I'll just take a cab. Well, as I looked into it, I all of a sudden get an email from the PAN Foundation that pays for my co-pays on my prescription D doesn't pay for it. And, you know, whatever that is on medications. So if it's $70, they'll pay it for certain medications for a year, and you get a certain amount of grand. Well, they send me an email, and it says, wait a second, you're eligible for travel assistance to your medical appointments. You know, and I said, really? So I called the guy, and I said, what is this? And so I applied for it. Sure enough, they said, yeah, you got it. And that means you can go to any medical appointment. Well, I thought right away, what about to this procedure? Oh, yeah, that'd qualify. Matter of fact, if my cousin didn't want to pick me up, they would have drove me home, so they would have drove me there. So anyway, it was only a week away. Sure enough, they send me a credit card, prepaid, and all I have to do is give it, sure enough, to, and it's for $500 a year. So that's just a little interesting, but it just came right when I had the procedure. I didn't expect it, and it was in the mail, so it didn't cost me the $45 to get to the hospital. These are things that I'm going to go across to share with you after I go over the corona, which is the spinach of this meal, because we're at a precipice. And just hold on. If you're going to do the hard stuff first and then those two desserts, and I'll fill you in what you need to do, who you need to contact, and whether also first the stimulus. So we'll do with the money stuff, the goodies later. First, we're going to get to the serious stuff. Everybody now is fixing to be in the window of being able to get the virus or the vaccine for the virus. I have been through the series of two. I qualified just for the surgery I had a couple of years ago for my heart surgery. And it was fine for me. I got my first one in February and the last one on March 24th after my procedure. And I got a little under the weather after that, not seriously so, after the second one. And that's it. And I spoke to, and now they're opening up for people who are regular. Biden has already reached whatever his goal of, I think it was whatever, a number of months, and they're speeding this up. It's getting to the point where you can go anywhere. Dentists are giving it, and we look like we're going to lick this. You know, CVC, Walgreens, Kroger, Publix. This is becoming dentist. I think now that dentists can give it, I think they even have some states where veterinarians are given this. You can just go in. I mean, they're making this so available for all you know. Soon they're going to have, you'll be able to go to medical classes and they'll have the nurses practice on you by giving you this vaccine. Well, they may end up having people just go inject it yourself. I'm kidding about that one, but that's how widespread this is. But we have to take the initiative, and I mean me, all of us, on getting this licked. Continue to wear masks. Continue to be safe distance. But you all need to take the initiative of getting out there, because the statistics are, and the mistruths that are wide-ranging in terms of this virus that are still out there, it's no wonder. If anybody was to live off the social media, the TV, you would be a blibbering idiot because of the misinformation that's spread around. I almost think social media has created a class of dunces in terms of, and computers, because the computer is only as good as those that are looking to see what they're going to research. If you're looking to just believe anything, you got everything out there. And for the weak-minded who don't verify, confirm things with research and facts, there's all sorts of stuff out there. And belief systems. You can see the people expressing these crazy beliefs. I've talked to people in my personal life with four-year college degrees who believe lunacy. Like, I heard someone died in Michigan a week after she had the vaccine. Well, we don't know what her health conditions. You can still die after you get the vaccine. Doesn't mean you die from corona, but you can still die. Doesn't mean the vaccine caused it. You can go drink a glass of milk and die 2 weeks later. Is it because of the milk? All of these things, the general public and the utter conspiracy lunacy, and it must be something in our society now where we've lost our moorings, and it's manifesting itself with this disease, because the information to be educated is out there on anything. But people choose in their thinking process to believe that which is not factual for their own reasons, because they want to believe it, because their fears tell them to believe it, because of some reason that is not really based on facts. And it hurts them, and they die. And they will. People are still dying from this. And that's why I'm so stern, like a stern master, taskmaster, in order to get people to understand. And I don't take excuses. The minute I had a friend of mine tell me that, I'd say, you crazy? You're believing that poppycock? That you think somebody that died, you're correlating it? Not many people. No, I haven't heard of any statistical raising of people dying from the virus. Not the virus, but the vaccine. People are dying all over the place for viruses, and people are still getting it. We're having second surges because people are still stupid, or people don't want to wear the mask anymore. And I did. I went to a family occasion on Easter. I didn't wear a mask. But everyone there was vaccinated already. And if I did it, I did. I'd been vaccinated. I'm sure I'm not going to catch it. But still, when I go out in public, I practice the safety measures. And the benefits of the end of the tunnel is getting us with the herd immunity, getting control of this, where we reach a point where everybody's vaccinated, even if it turns out there is a worst-case scenario, would be that you might have to get a vaccine once a year, you know, or once or twice a year. If that's the worst thing that's going to happen, that's not the worst thing in the world. So what you need to do as we look forward, since finally the government has gotten this, and to be fair to both administrations, doing this on a massive scale, logistically, is a difficult thing. It's not an easy thing. So I haven't been too hard on either side. I think some of them dropped the ball, but in the end, you can't, because what is it? We've had it since really just January, and now it's January, February, and this is March. So it took 3 months to get the thing where now everyone pretty much is at a point very shortly where everyone will be able to, because it's not just what they do. It's supply, production of it, production of needles, production of systems, training people to do it, getting it done on every level, and you're talking hundreds of millions of people, all processes in order to get that rolling. I don't think it's a bad job if we get it done in 3 months or so, which is what it looks like it's going to be doing. And that was started way before. So I'm not so hard on that, but I am hard on people who are not taking the initiatives of getting it done. I personally was on top of it from the beginning of the year. And it took me until February 24th, so 2 months. But I was on it. I was checking health department, every store, and I just kept checking and calling until I just got in touch, because I was such a nuisance about it, until one day my pharmacist at my local Walgreens just told me, by the way, She called me over as I was leaving the store. By the way, we found out we're getting a new shipment. You can book it for tomorrow. And sure enough, I did. That's how I got it. But it was because I was hovering around, knocking on doors, making calls, checking websites on an ongoing basis. And that is what you need to do. We need to first get your mind off the disparaging of these vaccines, the spooky Casper ghost is behind the corner, conspiracy theories about this vaccine. There has been no evidence of massive people dying from these vaccines. And if anything, they're saving lives. There is massive evidence of people dying from corona. And you must get these things, thoughts out of your head. If you had them, get rid of them, especially if you're anyone in our Brain Injury World Commission or Brain Injury World Community, Stroke Community, people who are elderly, anybody. And remember the young people, too, because they can give it to their elderly relatives, or in a lot of cases, they can die from it themselves. So we need to find ourselves in our heart to find it. If you have questions about it, when you believe one of your conspiracy theories that Uncle Ernie told you about what it does, call your doctor, call the pharmacy, make calls and talk to a health professional. Believe me, they're not going to tell you that it's going to fall off. Most of them have it already because if they're kind of required to have it in a lot of cases. You know, you can't work in a hospital and not get the vaccine. They'll probably tell you you need to seek another job. So talk to them, and you'll find yourself being able to find a place to get it and get the two vaccine felons. Take initiative. Because let me tell you, folks, we're coming to a precipice where we're going to be able to accomplish something and get this done. And at least reach a level where if we don't reach herd immunity and it's knocked out altogether, we'll at least reach a level where maybe a booster shot at the end of the year will help and get us to a point where we could do these things and at least keep this under control where we're not living with masks anymore. There will be a day. I'd give you information. If you do just Google in 1918, and take a look at some of the pictures put in Spanish flu, and you'll see people in that era when there was no vaccine for that. I think it's 50 million people died worldwide. Huge. Millions in the United States. And people were wearing masks. Well, guess what happened? If you take a look at pictures circa 1920s, no one was wearing masks anymore. So it can be achieved. And like I said, the worst thing that can happen is we could achieve herd immunity, or at worst, the way it looks, if it doesn't look, depending upon what research they find out, how people, you know, when they do test studies of people who have been given it, you know, how long is it effective? Do you develop an immunity? Once they determine that, we'll determine whether we're going to have it once or twice a year, four times a year, or we're just going to be immune and reach herd immunity. Either way, it'll be better than this current situation. And economically, things are already starting to pick up because of that, because this is going to be unleashed. And so emphasis. I got a couple of calls coming in. People are listening. Maybe I'll see if they're on the air to see if they can add to this, because they both might have stories. I'll invite two people on the just to check in to see if they want to talk. And on this particular subject, I'm going to try to focus them on that, because this is the real next month I'm going to be having a guest on, and hopefully I won't have such a panicked way to get on the air, but we'll get their input, but I'll try to keep it on this part on Corona. And then, of course, we'll talk about the goodies, the stimulus, and, of course, the goodies on the PAM Foundation, what you need to do to, I'll give you the information so you can call them and stuff like that and apply if you're qualified for both those things. Anyway, but that comes later. First, we got to get through the spinach of this thing and see if you...
Hello.
Hello, hello,
hello. Hi.
Hello. Is this 11111? Huh?
It is. So you were talking about COVID and the vaccine and what you had to do to get it, and I got my first shot.
By the way, my audience, this is Kim Justice. She does a broadcast on Wednesday evenings, and I decided to pick up the line because she was the one that I disturbed her by calling her up, telling her, I can't get in the broadcast, so she helped me. So she deserves to be
on the Corona.
Yeah.
No, that's what I do, but I got to tell you, in the future, I want to be anonymous because there's things that I would say on someone else's show that I wouldn't say on my own because I wouldn't want to alienate my audience. So we'll call me another name from now on. Pick a girl's name. Any name you like when you answer the phone. But okay, so going back to the virus, I got my first shot about 10 days ago, however that math works out. April 18th is when I'm having my second shot.
Okay.
And I got Pfizer. I had a pretty bad reaction to the first shot, which is kind of, I haven't heard of that before. I've heard that a lot of people have had, you know, a nasty 24 hours or so after the second one, but it happened to me the first one, so I'm just praying that it doesn't happen the second one.
How bad were you?
But, well, it was a nasty, being a brain injury survivor, and I'm not saying that everybody who has had anything would have the same thing as I did, because just for a clue to console anybody that heard what I just said, and I'm about to say, when I made a post that day, the shot was no big deal because they said an intramuscular shot. I expected it to be like real painful, like a tetanus shot, and it's not. It's like the flu shot. It's easy schmeasy, quick little needle, no big deal. And I felt fine afterward.
Very tiny needle. Yeah, tiny needle.
Yeah, it's tiny, so the shot's no big deal. And then we're in part of the country where they have Krispy Kreme, so if you went and flashed your shot ID card, they'd give you a free donut. So my husband and I did a selfie where we held up our donut up against either eye like a monocle and said, we just got our first vaccine. And I had a big smile on my face. And at the end of the night, I posted another picture and I said, I ain't smiling now. So I felt fine there and right after, but I took a nap. We went at noon and I felt fine. I took a nap about 4 o'clock. I just laid down for a while. And when I got up, and this was just, I'm not saying this was about, this part was about the shot, but I had a very deep nap, one of those where you wake up and you don't know if it's morning or the middle of the day or what. You're just a little disoriented for a minute because you were in such a deep sleep. But when I got up and started to walk down the hallway, it was like being in a fun house. The floor felt like it was tilted, and I was walking tilted, and the walls were tilted. Now, I didn't panic at that point because I was a little groggy from waking up. I just leaned against the wall and closed my eyes a few seconds, and things came back into perspective. So it was just a quick, super unusual kind of freaky thing. And then we ate dinner, and that was cool. And then the worst part of it then started for me, and that's that I started getting a headache that escalated and escalated and escalated and escalated
Was it behind the neck headache? In the back of the head?
That's so funny. Why would you say that? Yes.
Why would I say that?
It was, well, the only reason I'm asking is my brain injury was up in front, so I found it weird that it was in the back of my head like that.
No, because the very often the back of the head has a lot to do with the blood pressure and breathing. The back of the head, yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Well, it was a horrible headache.
No, it could be that it could be your blood pressure. There's a different kind of headache, right? And it wouldn't be related necessarily where you had your brain injury, but the one, and by the way, the one behind the back is the worst. It feels like your head is fixing to explode.
Yes. It did. And it went on for hours, and I let it go too long, and I took a couple Advil that didn't even dent it. It kept going.
Oh.
So, you know, there was about 5 or 6 hours.
Did you check your blood pressure?
No, because I didn't. No, I mean, I don't have high blood pressure, and I didn't know what you just told me. So, I wound up taking a couple more Tylenol a couple hours later, and I went to bed. And the next day, I just had what I call the headache hangover. I was just exhausted, you know what I mean, from carrying that amount of pain for 5 hours or 6 hours the night before. So I just felt real zapped the next day, plus had the stiff arm thing. But I'm hoping that that doesn't happen again, because that really did. You know, now we're 10 days out, but if you would have talked to me the day after, I was really scared and would have considered not going back for the second shot. I don't feel that way now, but it was scary.
Hey, the counter to that, though, is the virus would be worse of anything you suffer from. And I just want to let you know, well, we'll have her before she goes to bed. There's another caller in. I'm going to bring another caller on. Do you mind, Kim?
No, please.
Hold on 1 second. Audience? Hello? 994?
Bill?
Hello, 994. You're on the air.
Yes. Yes, this is Gail Arnold.
Gail Arnold, okay.
Can you hear me?
Next time you don't give your last name. You don't want to probably give that out public, but that's okay. Yes, hello, Gail.
Yes.
How are you doing? Have you heard the broadcast so far?
Yes, I've been listening. I heard what the previous lady said, and
Kim, she's still on the air.
Yeah.
Say hi to Kim.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, Gail.
Hi, I'm not going to, I won't call you by your name, and I will use my last name.
No, it's okay.
That's
don't
right.
worry about it.
Let's get all
That's
the rules
all right.
straight here.
No,
all
no,
right,
no,
Gail,
it's already too
saying?
Late, ladies. Everyone knows she's Kim Justice, and everyone knows you're Gail on. That's okay. It's okay. It's not going to matter. Don't worry. No one's creeping up your back lawn. I'm not paranoid. Yeah, actually, you can give whatever you want. That's okay. There's no rule, audience. Go ahead. Finish. Talk, ladies.
Yeah. Well, I have heard, you know, like a story of not quite as severe as what Kim just described of people getting headaches. I had my shot in, first shot in January, and I had my second one a month later in February. I had the Moderna. And I have to say, I was so extremely proud. I live in a small rural community, and they've had several now mass vaccinations where they opened up their gymnasium, and they did over 1,000 each time in a small community. It was so well organized. There were people that told you exactly where to go. It just took a few minutes. There were no waiting lines. They scheduled you online, and you went in, you got your shot, and then they had you wait for 15 minutes to see if there were any side effects. They had bottled water. They had all kinds of snacks. And it was just so well organized. I was so pleased. But as far as after effects, now I'm not a brain injury survivor, but I did not have, I had a slightly tender arm for a couple of days. I felt a little bit tired, but other than that, I had no serious side effects, no headache or anything like that. Now, I have talked to other people who had the Moderna shot, and, you know, they did have headaches. But everyone in my family, mostly younger than me, who have had it, have had nothing but maybe a slightly tender arm. So I just like the virus itself, it seems that it affects different people differently. And there's no rhyme or reason to it.
Right. No, you're right. I'm glad that that's all that happened. The fatigue and the sore arm are kind of a given, but so that's great. I'm glad that it was like that. And I pray my second one is like that.
I've never had a reaction to the vaccine either. And some people, like I have a neighbor not taking the vaccine because he says he has terrible reaction to the flu shot. So he's not taking the vaccine for that reason. But I've never had a reaction to
Who isn't taking
the
vaccine?
A neighbor of mine, because he has a terrible reaction when he's had the flu shot. So he gets very sick. So he doesn't want to risk taking the vaccine.
I think that's a bigger risk.
Well, that's something that he needs to take up with his doctor. I've got the Pfizer, the sheep, because my vaccine was a Pfizer, you know, after you get your shot, you guys all know they give you a sheet, you know, from the vaccine company. And it does say people who should not get the vaccine.
Yes.
And if you're somebody who's had a problem with vaccines before, it's probably something to talk to your doctor about.
And that's
the reason why what the man is doing is that goes into another area where we're making, and that's what I said. What Kim just said is what I said at the beginning of the program. If you have something where you have come to a conclusion that is not medically based, first of all, flu shots and this are two different things. They're not the same thing, not the same reaction. They don't work the same. The virus doesn't work like a flu, and this doesn't. And we just because you get sick doesn't mean it's the same thing. You get sick with a common cold, it's not the same thing as a flu or a corona. Now, it may exhibit some of the same symptoms, and you could die from those things, but it doesn't necessarily go along that one is the same. But, again, she said what I said. If you're in doubt, because of the dangerousness of the vaccine, unlike the flu, which you can survive from, you have to talk to your doctor about whether what you're concluding is correct and whether you may be more sensitive to, as opposed to just us ad hoc making a decision based on something, because then you'd find out from the doctor whether his reaction to the flu shot is correlated to this. Me, personally, I don't get flu shots. I don't think I've ever had a flu shot in my life. And my experience with this, I felt I played tennis after I got the first one. And after the second one, I felt, but it might have been related to something like allergies or something, but I felt a little warm. And that night I felt just a little heated, not excessively, and a little under the weather for about a day. But that was it, nothing severe. But, again, that's me. By the way, I have heard women are more susceptible to feeling better or worse than men with this as a rule. And so...
and the only reason I don't want to deter anybody, so all I wanted to say at the end of my comment was about that posting that I made, is that 68 people, I have not gotten so many people comment on a post, but 68 people commented on my vaccine post, and there were only 3 people who, you know, really didn't feel well. All the rest of the people did fine. So, like Gail and you both said, different people react differently for different reasons.
Correct.
But according to my not official survey on Facebook of 68 people that responded to my vaccine comment, just because all the people, well, your age, my age, you know, we were, before they opened it up to everybody on Monday to all ages and the race was on to, for everybody to go get that vaccine when they were doing it in an orderly way by age. And I was on the last day of that, I think. All the people like that I went to school with and stuff, you know, like we're all have gotten the first shot, had their appointment for the first shot, had just gotten the second shot. So that's why so many responses, I think, to my post. But so nobody panic out there because I had a bad experience. The majority of the people that answered my post did not. They were more mild, like these two are talking.
Yeah, and I will factor in this. You know, there is an element of risk to all medical treatment. You know but when you have an ailment that is really dangerous, for instance, there's no doubt that having open heart surgery is a dangerous thing to do. There's risk involved
yeah.
in that. There's no two ways about it. Getting your chest cut open and being under a surgical knife for 6-7 hours is a risky thing, highly more risky than having a vaccine shot with the corona. But if you're
yeah.
given the choice that your expectancy to not do that is far more dangerous, you will not live. So you have no choice but to take that risk. Medical treatments of all kinds, even going to the dentist, for goodness sake, you can get sick and die from a dental surgery. People do. I think
Joan
Rivers,
right about the
yeah,
benefits
yeah,
outweighing
yeah,
the cost
but,
of the vaccine,
but,
I think.
Right. But to understand as we do these things that, you know, we get caught up in the big risk. Like, for instance, I'll bring up again my heart surgery. Yeah, I guarantee you if I looked at the statistics, there are people that die from heart surgery, okay, literally, just from the operation. But they have to take the risk in order for the benefits of what would happen if they don't do it. Well, it's the same thing with the coronavirus. And in this case, the statistics are probably far less fatalities or people really being severely ill because of vaccines than there is with a surgical procedure of any kind. And so...
Or COVID. I mean, I think I agree with
where,
you.
Where,
I was
where,
on
now,
the fence
well,
about the vaccine
well,
for
wait,
a long...
Wait, let me finish. Whereas else we know millions have died from COVID, hundreds of thousands in this country. The chances of dying for COVID is much more greater than not. As opposed to me, where you could have, let's say, maybe had difficulty living like the COVID with the heart not taking care of it. Well, guess what? There's much more risk taking a heart procedure or any other medical procedure that's surgically involved than it is with the vaccine, which I haven't seen, other than you might not have felt well a day. Other people have felt bad and stuff, but I haven't seen anybody on any statistical comparable dying from the vaccine, and I don't see it. So, and I guarantee you they reported. Now, do you concur with that, Kim? What I said.
I do. I don't want to go further. Yes, I do. I do. It's much worse. I was on the fence for a while about the unknown because there is no approved vaccine to prevent COVID. These are all emergency use actions that, you know, brought the three vaccines that we currently have, the Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J. And so I was on the fence, but what I'll tell you is, to me, dying of COVID is different than I know four people personally, this isn't counting listeners and people I've heard of on Facebook and this, that, and the other, but people I know personally that got such damage wreaked on their body from COVID, and you talk about heart, and these are people that are in like their 50s and didn't have any pre-existing conditions. On one of the guys, the virus went after his heart, and he has had to get a pacemaker, but the damage is so severe to his heart from the virus that they're not so sure that he's not going to need a transplant. I have another girlfriend I went to school with who, it's been almost a year since she got diagnosed with COVID, and she's still having to get 3 breathing treatments a day because of the damage that it caused to her lungs. And she's been in the hospital about 13 times with pneumonia, just repeated pneumonia, and that all started with the COVID. And that's what damaged her lungs, and so she's been getting these breathing treatments. And a couple others I won't go into, but the long haulers from the damage, you know, the people that don't die, we got used to seeing, you know, the number of positive cases and the number of deaths, you know, those were all on the TV all the time. Last administration, they seemed to disappear with our new one, but in any case, those are the numbers we saw. They never did report numbers of people that didn't exactly recover from COVID. They didn't die, but they didn't recover because the virus wreaked such havoc on, it could be their kidneys, their liver, their heart, their brain. Encephalitis is known to happen to the brain. Again, the heart issues, liver, kidneys, and it's arbitrarily goes where it wants to go, you know.
But lungs are like the top of the list. And I had a friend of mine in Texas, his brother died because his lungs were so damaged, they got weaker and weaker. In other words, the virus that begins to get out of your body, but your lungs are so damaged. That's why they put them on breathing machines. And that's why they're always dying when they're on breathing machine. But by that point, the lungs are so weak that they become non-functioning because of the damage. I will bring up another one. There's a player on the New Orleans Saints that had COVID last year. And he is almost, he can't play now for a period of time because guess what? The damage to his lungs are so bad he can't walk across the street. How is, and this was a guy that's a linebacker who's in his early 20s, 6'4", 240 pounds, and could run, you know, 4 or 5 40s and up and down the field. And guess what? He got corona, and he can't walk down the block now. Think about the effect of that because of the damage to his lung. And he's, guess what, a football player, 25 years old. You couldn't possibly conceive of being in better physical conditioning, and right. It affected him that way. So that's the – and just think –
That got me off the fence were those kind of things, you know, the long haulers, people that wind up – You know, I've already had my life affected for the rest of my life from my brain injury. I did not want to catch that virus and wind up dealing with something else for the rest of my life. To me, death would be the quick way, having to suffer through something else every day for the rest of my life. I would rather take my chances with the vaccine. So, and I'm glad that you brought up the football player because the two people I mentioned in their 50s, this has happened to young people. Bill just gave a great example of them, but there's plenty of others. So this has happened at all ages.
There was a woman in New York who was a marathon runner, 32 years old. The woman, she did an interview on one of the broadcasts. she told it. She, you know, she's drinking a coffee. She's running a marathon. She's in a jogging. She said, that's what I did. I got back. I got sick. She said, and she's crying. And to the interviewer, she says, I can't walk up the stairs. Think about it. When you're that in conditioning, like that football player, the look of fear on his face where he tells you, you know, you see he's built and he says, I can't walk down the block. I can't take my dog to the walk, you know. And so, and, you know, in some ways, the because apparently what happens when the virus attacks, the effort that the lungs have to do in order to counteract the virus is what damages them. In other words, it tears itself apart is what the lungs are doing by trying to work so hard on what a normal breath was. It's trying to work so hard. Same with the way with the heart. It starts affecting it because it's working so hard. That's why some people that get it get heart rates that are so fast, your heart would blow up if it's beating 120 beats a minute for the next 4 hours. You understand? And so yeah. Yes, it does affect you. There's no magic bullet. And, of course, and some people who are older survived, you know. So that doesn't mean people with pre-existing conditions and older people are more prone than younger people still. But like you said, and, you know, they've been so caught up. One thing you're really insightful about Kim, they've been real big about, you know, the media always plays the sensational. They just want to keep, you know, the numbers up on the screen about deaths. They really haven't fully reported and haven't had the time, really. In that way, I'll give them a pass. Of the what are the walking wounded with this? In other words, we already know who died, who survived, but what are those survivors? What's the follow-up? How many survivors do we have that have all these conditions going on, like we mentioned here?
Well, and they'll be tracking them. And I know, you know, another thing we have to educate people about is the prevalent coronavirus in the United States as of now is that UK variant, the B.1.1.7. And
right.
If younger people had thought that, you know, that our first round, whatever, of COVID when we first got it here, it was killing people in nursing homes and older people, not that younger people weren't getting it, but it appeared that the preponderance of the people dying were older. And so young people, you know, kind of looked at it as being, oh, that's not going to affect me. That only affects old people. Well, people need to know now that it's not like older people aren't going to be affected, but the majority of the people that are being affected by this UK variant are kids and people between 30 and 45. So that age group is getting their turn now, and they may want to consider the vaccine if they weren't going to before, because there's more UK variant than there is the original COVID in the United States right now.
Yeah, and that maybe encourages the people that are under 30 who really think they're Superman to get it too, because they don't know if the next variant is going to hit them, because there are some things that people who are younger are more prone to. There are some, like there's certain diseases that people who are teens are more prone to, and 20s, than people who are older, because they haven't been around as long. And this so the variant might decide to branch off and start mutating into more younger crowd. There was a baby up in Maryland that died from it, you know. People thought that babies, and I think they may even have to vaccinate children.
They're doing clinical trials now on kids. Pfizer and Moderna are both doing clinical trials on kids at this point. I think it's going to take the parents, like I said, a new age bracket will have to start maybe thinking a little differently than they were the last year with the variants that are behaving a little bit differently as the original virus mutated. And then it appears that the vaccines are doing a fair job of making people not get so hit so hard with the UK variant. But one thing that bothers me a lot is that the Brazilian variant and the African variant, you were talking about reading. I've done a lot of reading on this stuff. The vaccine isn't known to be, they're being careful about the way they're saying it, okay, but the way that Fauci put it last night is that they're not known, that they're not showing that they're as effective against those two mutations. And one thing that really, really, really bothers me is that while we're all out getting our shots and trying to do the right thing, and we're on the race now, you know, they took away the orderly age brackets and said, okay, 1, 2, 3, run. Everybody, go as fast as you can. We're trying to outrun the virus, get your vaccines as soon as possible. But, you know, with the border open and people coming from Brazil and not being checked for the virus and coming over in the tens of thousands over the border, it makes me feel angry and bad that we're all racing around to get these vaccines to try to protect ourselves, and they don't just shut the border until we can get our country under control with this virus. Right out of Fauci's mouth last night was that the Brazilian virus and the African virus, the vaccines aren't doing so well for us, so what do? We open the borders and we don't check people who have those exact viruses. And I find that disturbing on the part of our administration, that on one hand, we're all getting told to get out and get vaccines, and on the other, they're keeping the borders open to let people just carry it in, you know. It seems counterproductive, you know, like a oxymoron, like shooting yourself in the foot, like a crazy thing to do, you know. Why wouldn't you just lock it down and let us get back to getting our vaccines, having the numbers go down again, letting businesses open again, you know, maybe take care of our own citizens for a minute. Anyway, I find that disturbing. So if there was anyone I could call or write about that, you know. And the other thing is that it was just before I came on, I told you I was watching the news, and they were showing in Brazil, of all places, I don't know why, they were showing that they're having such huge numbers of the virus there that they're having to dig up graves that are there already and stack, double stack graves. The virus is so severe there. And how many of those people are we seeing that are migrating, you know, walking from there to here to cross the border because we've got the welcome mat out? That is very discouraging to me.
Yeah.
So I'm all for immigration reform. I am not for the willy-nilly, chaotic, out-of-control thing that is going on right now.
That's a political issue, which I don't really want to cover in this broadcast.
No, and I don't either. But it is and it isn't.
But you brought it up. You've already stated your opinion, but I'm not prepared to go into it. I haven't researched it enough, and I'm not sure about it. And I'm sure there are some issues with open borders and people coming from various parts, either Brazil or other places, And maybe there is some, but reality, that doesn't count to the fact that we still need to get the population vaccinated. And
no, it doesn't.
So,
it doesn't.
So, and I'm just trying to encourage my citizens. I doubt very strongly if they're listening to our programs, but if they are, we probably should vaccinate them too. And I don't think one is worse than the other. And they have found that most of these do work against variants, these vaccines. And
do the research. So, do the research. I'm just going with you, and that's all I got to say about it to the listeners. Do the research. You'll see what I'm saying is true. And
well,
the reason we can't give them the vaccine, they're not being checked, and B, we don't have enough supply
That's a political and an immigration issue. I'm not prepared to discuss it in the broadcast. And I'm trying to encourage people to get corona.
Well, it was actually a COVID issue, but I am too.
Yeah, it's not really a COVID issue. It's a political and an immigration issue. I may or may not disagree with you, but for my audience's sake, the key is to make sure they get vaccinated themselves. At this point, we don't have control unless we're going to go down to the border and stop them from coming in. I don't think we're going to control the border today, and I think it's more a political issue, and it will be decided with political decisions made at that border, whatever the reasons, and there has been. And I don't think that's a COVID issue. It's a political issue, and I'm not ready to get into a debate about immigration, what we should do about the border. I wasn't prepared to do that.
I don't want
I'm
to either. I was done.
Yeah.
I was done.
So I discussed it, but I'm not. Gail, are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah. And I have no control, and I doubt that the Brazilians that are crossing the border are listening to this broadcast anyway. And it's something to look into, certainly something I may even see your side of. It's just not prepared to do this broadcast because all we can control.
And I don't want to.
So all we can control is what our audience is needing to do. And, on another broadcast, that's not. I try to keep away from political issues on this program, and that goes into a political issue. Now, do political issues have effect on COVID? Yes, they do. But at this point, we have no control of even advocating for that issue on this broadcast. All we can advocate for our audience within realms of the corona is to encourage them through what we all said to get the virus. Whether they can do other things, well, that's something else for them to decide. Yeah. Well, that's all we can do. We can't accomplish everything with this broadcast, and certainly that is, because my audience, some will find that okay, some won't. So, but what I do want them all to know, for instance, one of the great areas, and there's people in this audience who've fallen. And one of the big talk about being a semi-political issue, only in the sense that there's been this conscious raising of Black Lives Matter. And I've listened to all the reasons, and I'm not getting into the political areas, plus or minus of it, but all these people...
You already did.
No, I did not. I just mentioned that it's been the vogue that Black Lives Matter has been stressed on so many different levels by a lot of people who advocate for that or some people who are against it, and regardless. And they've used all sorts of poster childs for this to save black lives because people get shot or some people were abused, like the guy out in Minnesota who's on trial now who decided to, probably did just something a little extra and killed somebody. Okay, these things happen. I mean, they're making a big deal about it, but that's essentially, I thought he got a big guy, decided to do it, and he just went a little too far. Cops do those things, needless to say. But that very community, statistically, and that's part of the audience, I did a broadcast with a black support group in this state, and so I do contact them as a respect because I'm here to serve that audience. Well, in their community, with all this advocacy to save black lives, the reality is, on my broadcast here and in other ways, by stressing the utter disbelief that large portions of the people of color in the black community believe so many different conspiracy theories that statistically they're like 30% less likely to get a vaccine than white folks, for a very good reason. They believe, because of the medical community has treated them in the past, probably not so well, they believe there's something out to get them. And I've spent 2 broadcasts on this, and I've talked to that community and told them that that is factually incorrect. No matter what they feel about what may have happened in the past, and I'm sure they got short-steamed, there's evidence of the Tuskegee experiment, they were turned away from hospitals. There's no doubt about it in the past. But in this case, there's nothing that anybody or whitey or the white power structure, if that's what you believe is out to get you, is going to do in order to affect you with this vaccine. Because they make it for everybody, it's pretty much straightforward. So I think because of all that Black Lives Matter, all that time wasted on some irrelevant things, if they had spent a little more time, including the basketball players, the football players, getting off their rear ends, and instead of worrying about protesting in basketball games and kneeling down, and spent their time in their communities educating their population. The statistics are they could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives in their communities, and they haven't done anything, and they haven't done anything till this day. The only thing I ever hear on the media about it is, oh, there's terrible things in the black community. Well, what's the answer to that? Get your community leaders, instead of off all this other stuff, get them in there. They'll have more effect and save more lives in the black community, convincing them that it's okay to take the vaccine, and they haven't done it. Nothing. Nothing. They're still worried about a skinny Minneapolis policeman who went overboard in collaring a guy in Minneapolis. That's what they're focused on in order to protect black lives, when the truth of the matter is they're dying in droves because they have the least amount who are getting the vaccine, and they keep dying and dying. And they wonder why they're dying at a higher rate, because they believe by their history and stuff. But the leaders, what do? They don't say, I don't hear one word. I don't hear one protest screaming and yelling at the communities, get vaccinated. Instead, what are they focused on? Some little off-the-wall trial out in Minneapolis, as if that's going to save them. It's abysmal, the actual deceit that means. It's almost like a joke, because my answer would be is, funny, on my little broadcast here, I did more advocacy to save black lives than any of them did in one area. I don't hear one of them going into the community. They want to make all these proselytization. Once did LeBron James go into any underdeveloped black community and say, hey, brothers, good idea to get vaccinated, right? No. You know what the NBA did? They wanted to advocate that they should get the vaccine first, which is exactly what they did. That isn't a political statement. That's an observation of misdirecting, and it's directly related to COVID, and it's directly related to a community that is underserved historically, no doubt about it. And in this particular case, the percentages of them getting the virus and the percentage of them dying is way out of whack, and it's only because they're not getting access and they don't believe and they're refusing to get the vaccine.
I'm hoping that that's going to be better. What you're saying is true in our town. I can't speak to any other town, but, you know, there was a scuttle on the local news that certain communities were being underserved, and now there are so many vaccination venues in that community that there is no reason not to go. Availability isn't a problem.
No.
Accessibility isn't a problem. They don't have to drive more than a couple miles from home to get to one of the places. You know, that's how our city chose to do it. Not that anybody wasn't welcome to come and get a vaccine at the places scattered about the city that were giving vaccines. You know, you were talking about Walgreens and the grocery
CDC.
And
the
county and all of that. There were plenty of places, and anyone was welcome to come. But you know, our town was okay, fine. We got 7 places, you know, down just to serve the underserved communities. And so I hope that you're right. I hope that they're taking up the free, conveniently located area that will give them a little more protection over this virus like the rest of us, and that those numbers will go down.
But again, in their communities, like I said, the reason why I mentioned, I didn't mention it as a political statement, it's just a fact that's been the popular to-your-jaw, Black Lives Matter. But yet, with all the prostellations of the last year, I haven't heard one big media push, one big push by their leaders, one big push by all these superstar athletes telling everybody, get vaccinated. They are not. And the reason why they're being underserved is because their own community leaders are underserving them, telling them, don't believe it, get the vaccine. And I, matter of fact, I had a cab driver that took me to my appointment. Remember I mentioned I had to go to my procedure? This is a woman that had the corona. She told me so, like in January. Right? And she's a cab driver. She's driving me to my procedure a couple of Mondays ago. And then she's sitting there. She's a person of color. And she's sitting there. And you know what she tells me? But I'm not going to get the vaccine because, of, you know, it's suspicious. She's believing the mumbo jumbo of their community. And I told her, you got to be crazy. You had it. And you got that sick. You never know. The next time might be a variant. It might kill you. That is what I'm telling you. And so all of the media, all of the stuff, nothing, no big push. You know why? Because it ain't selling magazines. It ain't selling TV time. It ain't raising the ratings. It's too boring. You know, they want to look good like they want to be Rosa Parks. But guess what? The hard stuff is going into the communities and telling them, by the way, you know, don't believe it. Get the vaccine. It's okay. There's no way they could do it. And then prove to them, by the way, see, if you go to the CDC, guess what? There's no way that person is going to give you anything less than the next person. So what's the conspiracy? You see, they literally believe their own fears, and that's where it cost them, and that's where they're misserved by the communities. Because if people really cared about Black Lives Matter, or I said, say, people of communities that are by and large, for a large percentage, undeveloped economically, guess what? Educating them on what's really good for them and will save their lives is a good thing. What do you think, ladies?
Well, the president and his medical directors.
What do you think, Gail? Are you there?
Yeah, Gail, what do you think? I mean, the president and the vice president and the committee, the COVID committee, have been pretty out there with everybody needing to go get a vaccine. What do you think, Gail?
Oh, I guess she's gone. we talked her out. We out talked her. Hello, Auntie. Well, have a good night. We lost her, but that's okay. Look, but it's just like I said. I've done this twice, and so now I'm going to address the people of color in the community. Is if you do not trust the system, which is a very large part of their community, especially people of color and the Black community, with some justifiable historic techniques. I always have an understanding. I can understand where they're coming from. But you have to look at where you are today. This isn't 1930s. This isn't the 1950s. This is the United States in 2020. And logic tells you that other than some of the fears we mentioned that can affect anybody getting this vaccine, like not feeling well and stuff, There's no way anybody could conspire against you with this vaccine. If you just go at random and right? You understand? You see what I'm saying, Kim? So there's no way that somebody can fix this to screw you. And if you want confirmation, contact a medical. If you don't think you want to get it, contact a local person that you trust in the medical community, and they will tell you whether they're black, white, or Indian, or Hispanic. You contact someone you feel you can trust in your community. Contact your local minister, your church. Contact your community leader. Contact your congressman and representative. Get the vaccine, and if you have a question about that, ask them. I guarantee you they'll tell you to get the vaccine, because there is no way that when you go into a CVC or a pharmacy or a drugstore or a Publix, they got the vaccine. They ain't going to give you the bad shot and someone else the good shot. Would you agree with me, Kim?
Oh, absolutely. Those vials have, like, enough for six shots
vial.
And once it's opened, it's got a very limited amount of time, you know. And so they're going to give those shots, boom, 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 people are coming through the door.
Yeah,
they're not looking at what color you are or what sex you are or anything else.
They could not figure out a way to conspire. They just want to get that vaccine in you and get you on your way. Want to hear a funny story about what happened to my local CVC on my second shot, the poor girl there that she's dealing with? I go there. I had this appointment since 4 weeks before they set me up, right? I show up and there's a crowd there. And I look at the poor girl who's very sweet, very cute, very pretty, who's designed. Her name is Heather. She looks. And she looks at me and said, "You're in my system." And I said, "How things going?" She said, "The county triple booked us." In other words, I had an appointment at, like, say, 12:30, you know what the county did? Didn't pay attention to their system appointments and just sent three other people there as well. So they were inundated. She was a mess.
God.
Seriously. Hey, listen, you got to love it. That's why we tell the people of color or anyone else who thinks the government's out to get it, because some people on the right feel this way. I have conservative people who think the government's out to get it. They're going to inject some kind of, the listening device in your body. It ain't happening. They're not organized enough. The whole thing is, the only conspiracy is that they're disorganized enough that they'll send four people down. So I had a win.
Yeah, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there about that it changes your DNA or it does this or it does that.
Yes.
All I'm saying is you don't want to get COVID. You sure don't want to be a long hauler with the symptoms of COVID.
Hey, Kim, if you get the vaccine and it gets you up to start dancing the two-step, then you'll start to say, there's a conspiracy about it. I'm just kidding, Kim. Could you imagine if it got up and just started dancing the jig down the hallway? No, I'm just kidding. I should have brought my guitar in and serenaded the poor girl who looked at me, and she's such a nice person. But this got her when she looked up and said, "They triple booked me." In other words, the county just booked them. I was in their system, so then they had triple people for each appointment slot. That by audience, that is the conspiracy. If you give them enough time, give them enough money, they will find a way to foul it up. It's the history of mankind.
Well, and I think, you know, they made a mistake. My experience was like Gail's. Everything, you know, we signed up online and it was an appointment, and everything she said, it was all very well organized, et cetera. But, you know, this is a huge undertaking.
Yes,
and when the variants started showing up, that's when they took away all of the, you know, age limits and just said, okay, everybody go, you know, starting on Monday, no matter what age you were. They weren't doing it by age brackets anymore. It was, if you can get a shot, no matter how old you are, grab it, 18 and older or whatever, 16 and older on one vaccine, 18 and older on the other vaccine. But they were just telling everybody to go and literally said it was a race, you know, against the virus and the vaccine. So the government certainly giving the push. And like I said, I was on the fence. I was a little leery of something that, but I didn't.
By the way, in fairness,
half
I was
a dozen
too,
and one, you know.
Yeah, sure, sure. Listen, anything. Matter of fact, me. I even though I take medications for my condition, I'm doing well. I believe in them, but I'm always a reluctant camper with any medication, and I check the side effects all the time. I'm not one to just blindly accept things. And that includes this. I was looking for, I understand people's, you know, and I'm telling my audience this and who's listening, I understand your consternation about that and the people of color who have certain other historical reasons to feel reluctance. I'm just showing you that that's now past. We could all illuminate on those things like you did. But in the end, we've all come to the conclusion that it's okay. You're not gonna, you may get a little sick, probably such, well, you're probably not going to get so bad that you can't pull through it. We know the vaccine, the thing, and there's no way that they conspire against you. And for those that believe when they're injecting little men in you to spy, well, you might get the vaccine and then go see your doctor about the little men that's in your body now, okay?
Yeah, I don't think that they're injecting GPSs in us, but if they are, there's a camera on every street corner, and they're listening on our phone and our computer and our social media and our cars, and so really, you know, what's one more GPS against friends, you know, among friends, right?
So now that they can, now that they got a camera to see out of our backside, who cares?
Yeah, I'm not doing anything. You know, and as far as that historical perspective, I just want to say one thing because I saw it today on a news thing when you're talking about history and coming up to current, because that's been a big problem across the board. Yeah, it's actually, 2021 is come up to today, and I'll give you an example. The military has been experimented on since the beginning of time, and so no one color can claim that. You know, the military has, in fact, right now as we speak, the Army is getting injected. They're doing a trial on a vaccine that would hopefully cover any variant here or that might come, and the Army can't, they can't say no. They're in the military. They're not allowed to say no.
It's a
clinical trial going on right now.
Guess what they did? In the 1950s, the military.
I know what they did.
In the 1960s, we know what they did with the blacks and the Tuskegee with the, syphilis. And,
I'm talking about the rest of the military. They're not alone in the boat, is what I'm saying.
They did it to the Tuskegee. We know about that in the 30s with syphilis. And then in the 1960s, I'm going to tell you two of these. In the 1960s, in a prison right here in Atlanta, where I live, they experimented with LSD on guess who?
The military.
Prisoners. There were prisoners in the prison here in Atlanta Penitentiary. Guess who one of the prisoners was? A psychotic Boston killer named Whitey Bulger. Well, just that. They pumped him through LSD for like months where he was nuts. and then they released him and sent him on the streets. Okay, they turned a psycho into a mega psycho, and they wonder why he was a nutcake. You understand? Think about it. And fast forward as far as abuse, the CIA also dropped nerve gas on the New York City subway system in the 1950s, and that's where I lived. You know that.
Yeah.
They tested gases on the subway systems. So they have a habit of doing these things. We don't want to mention. Right. Yes. And they've been doing it in history, and they probably do it today too on something. You know, listen, this is what I try to tell people. One of the things I looked about, since it was Easter, I was watching on the History Channel all these, biblical things about Jesus, the crucifixion, and they've done archaeology of the time, and they now have found bones that indicate that the Romans knew how to nail you to a cross. There's proof now. Matter of fact, Herod, the king that, you know, was around during Jesus' time, that built Masada, who was appointed by Rome. Well, before him, there was another king that fought Rome and fought their occupation. Well, he lost to them, and they appointed Herod. Well, guess what they did to that king? They crucified him, and they have his bones. They've shown you the foot, and they literally knew how to drill it in the right bone of the foot. And they said for 2,000 years, they always thought it was BS that they nailed Jesus' hands to the cross. But you know what they said? They found bones of a hand, and they figured out the Romans knew how to do it by nailing it in and then bending the nail over the fingers. And so that would keep them in place. They knew how to do it. But when I discussed the Romans, after watching all of these things, what the Romans did, everyone thought that Jesus being up on the cross was this unique thing. I even believed it. But in truth, the guy that committed him to death, they sent him to that mountain. Crucifixion was a big thing in Rome. They did it all the time.
Yeah.
Exactly. A matter of fact, the place, you know why we know where Jesus was crucified? Because they still have the remnants of the rocks where they used to put the crosses in. They had a permanent structure that they pulled out the archaeology. It's still there. They have like 10 of them. You know why they had so many of them? It was used on an ongoing basis, crucifying people. Every time someone gave them trouble, they put it. Now, to give you an example, the scale of crucifixion in the Roman Empire, they actually gave the Jews a break. They were kind. They would let them take them off the cross, because you know what the Romans used to want to do? Is they would leave you on the cross forever. You were not allowed to take the body down. But because the Jews believed in the Sabbath and bringing it down, they said, look, let's not push them. We don't want to make these people crazy. We'll let them take them off the cross. We'll just kill them. But just to give you an idea of the scale of Rome and crucifixion, why it's explained that when Pilate crucified Jesus, he really wasn't. This wasn't like the major event of the 20th century for him. He gave a little trouble, caused a little trouble, crucified. It wasn't like this was something he didn't do all the time. Okay, that's what I do. Okay, give it trouble. I guarantee you he didn't go through 3 days of agony. The Romans, when they had a slave revolt by Spartacus in Rome, do you know what they actually did, just to show you how much they crucified? They defeated the rebel army who had gone all over the whole peninsula of Rome, attacking all legions and causing all sorts of trouble. They finally cornered them at the tip of the boot of Italy near Sicily, and they captured like 20 or 30,000 of these rebels and Spartacus. Guess what they did to them? They murdered. They have a road called the Appian Way that leads out of Rome and goes north up the peninsula. It's still there. Guess what the Romans did? They crucified every one of them every 6 feet from Rome
25 or 30 miles up the entire highway and left them there forever. That's what they did. One after another, 20 or 30,000 crucifixions. They just did it on a massive scale, every one of them. So I don't think they were worried about doing crucifixions. But what I concluded, though, the irony is it, just to bring this into current tense, my point on this, they were brutal, the Romans. I mean, this was at the time, to just 2,000 years ago in human civilization, just to show people today where they're complaining about where we're at now, where man has come from. 2,000 years ago, the Romans were the most civilized nation on the face of the earth, and they were the most brutal. Like I said, what you heard what they did with crucifixion, torture, delivering pain. I mean, when they came down on you, it wasn't like today. They would give, this is the choice. If they were going to take over your town, like in Judea, you had one of two choices. Either you paid taxes to Rome, they would build you roads, they would bathe you, and you would be able to become a citizen. And then the chief would say, well, what happens if they don't want to do it? Then the Romans would tell you, we'll take your women and children into slavery and we'll slaughter the whole bunch of you. That's what we'll do. That's what they did. It's that simple. And they would do it. Yeah. And they were brutal. And so the brutality of it, considering it, and that's why I mentioned, and what I try to say to people today is, as far as man's condition, well, we ended slavery about 150 years ago in this country. We did that around the whole Western civilization, including Europe. All of them kind of went away. Serfs in Russia, you know, slavery became changed over about 100, in that range, 100 to 200 years ago, some faster than others, including in the United States. Well, just to put that in context, before that time, every civilization on the face of the planet, going back the entire length of human civilization or human existence, had slavery as part of their thing. Our ancestors, yours, Kim, and me, probably were slaves at some point.
Oh, mine were. The Irish side, were. And, you know, the Italians came later. That migration was a little bit later. But in Rome, as you say, while in Rome, that was going on. As far as in this country, you know, they gave the Irish free land when the pristine people in your area now, in the New England area, had settled and got all their land. They were afraid of the Native Americans, and so they wanted a layer between them and the Native Americans to protect them. So they dropped flyers giving away free land over Ireland and Scotland. They looked down their nose at that nationality and saw them as scrappers and drinkers and tough, and they were. And so they came over and they planted, the New Englanders planted them on the other side of the mountains. So there was a group between them and the Native Americans. But, you know, there were signs in windows that said, if you're Irish, if you're German, you know, just about everybody at one time or another, there was a sign, don't apply here, you know, to get a job. So certainly that's gone on. And in fact, in Africa, the first slavery was black on black. It was wealthy black people who got the slaves together and sold them to white people.
Really?
So, yeah, that's in the history books too. But if we keep wanting to destroy the history books, then Rome is a good example, and it's interesting you'd bring it up because, you know, they were the largest empire for a long time, and there's a lot of lessons to be learned about how they evolved and how they finally fell. And it's interesting to watch how our country is repeating some things. And we have time to stop it, but, you know, the Roman Empire, I don't know how many years they were the Roman Empire, but, you know, we've been the superpower a certain amount of years, and nothing lasts forever. So you got to be careful. You know, at a point, the Romans got more into orgies and gold coins and wine and women and song, and they didn't have their eye on the ball. Anyway, they lost the empire. And
yeah, but I hope that doesn't happen here. Hold on. In reality, they never really did. First of all, it lasted 1,000 years. That's a foreign thing. And we're a few hundred years old. Secondly, in the reality, they didn't. The remnants of the Roman Empire still exist in the Catholic Church.
They're a city of their own, though.
Yeah, but the popes are descended from the emperors. The emperors became popes is what happened. And in a lot of, now Rome was overrun by, but you know what, empires sometimes have a way of expanding. I have much more faith in our country, and just from a thing. But I did want to discuss a couple of things before we go. One is, did you get your stimulus? I want to go over the stimulus and the Pan Foundation.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go. I just got a call. My mom got a pacemaker also, and she just tried to call me. So I need to call her back, but I did get my stimulus check, and I'm going to go back and listen to the last 30 minutes of your show because I want to hear this that you're going to be talking about for the next half hour. Absolutely.
No, I got 20 minutes, and this is what it's going to be about. If you have us, do you have to call her now? Yeah, do you have to go?
I do. I got to call her now, and so use the time on the listeners. And thank God everybody who missed any part of this knows, hopefully, that it goes from live to archive, the same link you might have clicked to listen to the show. You can click it any time after about an hour after we're off air, and you can replay the show from the same link because it's recorded and out there forever. So thanks, Bill, for having me. Thanks for doing the show.
Yeah,
it was fun.
It was a good thing, and it was fun to talk to you. And also, at the Pam Foundation, listen for that because that's good for you.
I'm going to.
Yeah, because it's interesting, and I'm going to share that with the audience. I want to make. I promised them that I was going to give them. That's the dessert. So they listened to my Corona push. So like a.
All right.
Yeah. Have a good one, Kevin.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you soon. And if you need any further information, do you want me to call you to give you the number of the Pam Foundation and stuff like that, so you can share it in other ways? I'll share it with you through email and also a personal call. Okay.
Yeah, good. Thank you. And I'm
glad
that you got through your heart surgery.
Kim. Yes.
It was. Thanks,
Bill.
Have
a good
one.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Yes. And audience, I just wanted to let you know that we're going to wrap up soon. It's the Pam Foundation. What I was going to discuss. This is something that you know. It's PAN. Look online. Patient Advocacy Network. And if you look at it, it's online, and you can look at it, and you can find it. And if you do that, you can get some benefits. They will pay for your prescription D coverage. For drugs, your co-pays, meaning what prescription D doesn't pick up. You have to qualify. It's a quick qualification. Doesn't require much time. And you can get on and make sure to apply. Certain illnesses are covered. A lot of them, certainly heart and stroke. And so you got to tell them what your illness is. Tell them the drugs you need. And if they have a grant and they have one available, they'll apply. You go through, you answer the questions. It's based on income. And if you qualify, you can get on it. They also, within this program, also have a a travel benefit to be able to be taken to and from your doctor's appointment that you can apply for, in which you are able to get taken to and from your medical appointments. This is helpful, and it's for $500 a year. They ended up, when if you were qualified, again, it's by income, you can apply, and then if you get it, you get a Visa card with a logo, and that will give you the benefit of being able to listen to, you know, be able to do it. I'm going to look up the number of the PAM Foundation so I can give it to you. PAM Foundation. I'm plugging it in the computer here. Foundation. Foundation. There you go. And it's PAM Foundation. The PAM Foundation number, you can apply. And like I said, take you an hour for both of those programs. One is the prescription program and one is the travel benefit. Both of them, you have to tell them your income level, tell them what you want, and tell them the illness to see if you're covering from. It's 1-866-316-7263. That's 1-866-316-7263. It's call. It's there between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's called the PAM Foundation, P-A-N Foundation. Again, that phone number is, like I said, 1-866-316-7263. And when you do that, you will find they offer find a disease fund, meaning you got to go in. There's a whole list of nearly 70 disease-specific program assistance. There's the travel benefit. That means if you get a grant, and by the way, they'll give up to $1,000 a year on the prescription assistance. There's a travel benefits if you're limited in income, where you're able to be taken to and from doctor appointments, and if you for up to $500 a year, so that you get a card, a prepaid Visa card. And so there's the two benefits you should take care of and take advantage of. And in order to benefit, just go again and just I'll give that number again. It's 1-866-316-7263. As for the stimulus, now Pam said, not Pam, but Kim, who I was talking to, said she got it. Well, I got mine on the 7th. I guess that was when I was supposed to direct deposit. For those of you who haven't, you need to go and check to see if you need to file your taxes. And go to go on to the IRS MyPayment.com and check to see if you, I think it's, yeah, my stimulus payment is on there. And you can check to see when you're going to get it. And it's it usually works that way so that you can access that and find out. Now, if you happen not to get it, you can, and you haven't filed taxes, and you didn't get the last one, I hate to be so late in the game in telling you this, you can apply and get the ones at some point by filing taxes, if you want to. If you have questions about that, you can go to, I think you can, there's ways you can look online. And remember, this is $1,400, so I would suggest you manage to go online. If you have to file an income tax, go to H&R Block, saying I want to make sure to get my stimulus. And if you file a tax return, you'll be able to get it that way. If you got it in the past, you get it. But you, and then you, myrefund.com is what it's called. You can look that up, and you can make sure to get the stimulus and enjoy it. And you know, you can get the stimulus done. It's called mystimulus.com. Let me see. I'm checking that stimulus. My stimulus check. just to give him. Looking it up, I saw it. Get my payment at the Eternal Raven. Your service is called. Get my payment. Third round is in. That is still available. Get my payment. If you go to the IRS, just put in the computer, get my payment, and we'll send you. Do not call the IRS. Our phone assistants don't have anything beyond what's available. And I said, we'll send you the third time in, the third round of income. If you haven't received one, it doesn't mean you won't. Payment status. So just go into that, get my payment, and that will explain to you how you get it. Yep, just go to the IRS, get my payment, and that'll be the walkthrough on what you need to do to get your money, either through direct deposit or by filing a tax return. If they know who you are, they'll know where to find you, they'll send you a check. It's up to you if you want your check. I like them checks. So make sure you file a payment, and you'll be able to get the check as soon as possible and enjoy it and all that good stuff. Coming up, we're going to vary this and get more interesting programs coming up because of me talking all the time. I guess you get used to it. But at some point, I wanted to do some things with some guests. I only wanted to make sure that I have the right kind of guests. I'm not just going to do like some host and just put any guest on. I got to make sure somebody that has something. And you got to do guests that are appropriate and stuff like that. And make sure they have help and make sure that they enjoy it. Make sure that they have as much possible insight. We have a good one coming up with a fellow TBI that's going to be doing. We're going to do another one with the Marcuses at some point about an autistic child. We're going to do a repeated absence, and that's such a great response. Next month we're going to have this guy that wrote a book on TBI because he's a survivor like us ourselves. And we got to make sure to, get stories out there that are relevant to it and stuff like that. So we're going to have some nice guests over the next 4 or 5 months. And like I said, I would rather just talk about current topics that are good as opposed to just running it out and stuff like that without, in other words, I don't want to just have guests for the sake of guests, only if they look like they're good. But anyway, it's good. Now, again, I want to tell you, I'm going to let you go next month because we're going to be back to sort of like living again, just a book about a person that has experienced with TBI instead of this corona. But while we're still on it, while we have a little more time, in closing, everyone can get the vaccine now. So there is no excuse. There is access out there. You've got to find it. If you're in another country, you've got to find it. We're the human race. We're in this together. We need to start to emphasize that we're our brother's keeper. We have to keep it up, and we have to get the virus. And if in order to do that, you need to take the initiative yourself. Anyway, and it's something that we need to do soon and do it in a way to make sure that we have as much things as possible. Just go to your CBC, go to your Walgreens, go to your health department. Now the vaccines are really being spread out all over the country. And go to make sure that you get it because you're helping not only yourself, but you're helping other people. If you have questions like me, Kim, and Gail Arnold mentioned about this vaccine, and you have questions, go ask your professional about it. If you have a theory, anything that makes you think that you can get away with this, you don't need to talk to somebody who's a professional to give you those answers. And for those of us, or those of you who are people of color, who have historic concerns about how you were treated by the health community in a lot of ways, you must understand that you need need to, that there is no way that someone could conspire against you in executing this. And in order to check whether there is anything wrong with this, you need to check with your preacher. You need to check with your community leaders. Call your congressman. Go to your church, and go to the church or mosque in your area and ask them if this is okay. And you will find out that it's something that you can do and stuff like that. And you will find out that they will tell you the truth and maybe counter some of the beliefs that you have and let you know that there is no historic difference. And this is 2021. It is not 1865 or 1955. So enjoy that time and start. We're going to see the end of this. This is not going to last forever, this corona. This is eventually going to end. We're going to get back to normal. We're going to get our lives back. And we're going to make sure we do it in the best way possible. And we're not going to live like this forever. They did in the 1920s. Look at the pictures. Eventually it ended. And this will end too. And like I said, in the coming months, I'm going to try to get this program, first of all, like tonight, a little lighthearted, and also a little back on target. I'm not going to be given. I've given my push for the coronavirus. It's now up to you to take the initiative and get it done. And act like adults and not like children. And now it's time to get back into the normal swing of things in my way. I'm vaccinated, and hopefully we'll see what the results of these, how it's going to be. And, yeah, I mean, we do this, and we'll knock this out. We've knocked other worse things out before. And we'll knock it out further. And this is going to be interesting, and it's also going to be a challenge. But we've been through much worse before as a country. You know, think about what this country went through during the Great Depression and World War II. This is nothing now, and it's something that's going to need to be changed and adjusted immediately, and that's it. We just need to go on and keep going, moving on and moving on. And before I sign off, I'll play my little song, and just you gotta we gotta get going, and we gotta get moving. We got to move fast, and we got to start getting back into our lives. We can't live like this forever, and you know, we have to get it on and get it on, as they say, and move on, keep moving on, and address, and get moving and keep moving, and think about all the things. One of the things I talked with my family about when I'm going to be going is, because I want to live the fourth quarter of my life. I hope some of you do, too. No matter what your condition are, I'm going to get my passport, because once this corona, just to give you an idea of the future, I'm ready to travel. I'm already going to set the stage of taking some trip. And as it gets better, I'll look for the country to do it in. But I'm already planning. You know, countries I want to go. I'm a tennis player, so I wouldn't mind going to Wimbledon and other places like that at some point. And think of some of the areas that I could see and live through. And certainly want to go to Rome. I was thinking Greece. That would be a nice place to go. And other places like that, Greece, and stuff like that, and places that would be interesting and also would have some cultural romance to it. personally, because I don't want to travel alone. So I'm definitely going to be traveling with ladies at some point, and hopefully settle down with one so we can plan out a lot of places, because life is interesting. And remember, no matter the consternations of your personal life, illnesses or issues with other things in terms of social upheaval we've had and economic issues and, of course, the corona, we have been through worse before as a country, and there's still plenty of ways to enjoy life. I find it's always good to try to reflect in the people you're in contact with the best you can, and to be peaceful, and you'll survive anything, including me getting on this broadcast tonight and not being ready when it was starting. It's like I was already thinking I was going to go to the principal's office, but I didn't have to. Anyway, until next month, the second Thursday, remember you can see this program repeated in our podcast online at the Brain Injury Radio Network if you want to hear a rebroadcast of this program. And you want to see everything we have, you most certainly can hear the repeat. We do plan on seeing you next month. We're going to have a special guest that's had a brain injury and wrote a very nice book about it that you all may find interesting. I want to see that you listen to that. I'll do an early promotion of that so you have a heads up on it. And so make sure you be well. And remember, it's not problems today. It's solutions today. And things are going to get better. Plan for the future. Plan, no matter all these upheavals and stuff, plan on living. Plan on being kind to the people around you. And God will be with you. And he will protect you. When you can't handle it yourself, just put it in his hands. It's Bill for the Brain Injury Radio Network and the Solutions Today Broadcasting signing off. I'll see you next month. Be safe. Make sure to take care of that corona. Next month you're on your own. Back to normal business. And I'll see you then. It's signing off for now. Have a pleasant month. Get lots of joy out of it, as I certainly plan to do it. I'll be playing, by then I'll be playing tennis again. So have a good day. Sayonara. See you the second Thursday of May. Enjoy.
Let me be your secret.
Zach Wilson, BYU, massive day against Boise State. We are breaking it down. Let's get it going. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the QB School. I'm JT O'Sullivan. Today, Zach Wilson. BYU went off against Boise on the blue turf. Some really, really special throws, and I'm very excited to bring them to you. Think you will dig them. Uncanny ability to create plays, drive the ball down the field. We are breaking it all down. Let's get it going. Welcome to the QB School. Zach Wilson, part two versus Boise State here. Going to his left, throwing an absolute dime on the run. A little out to the slot, something to pay attention to. That is a straight-up strike. Going to your left, getting downhill. Some great offensive architecture in this game, BYU. The play action off the wide zone game. But right here, getting downhill, clean stroke, upper body mechanics, as good as they get. Again, just pure scheme-wise here. Think paying attention to when I'm looking quarterback throwing on the run, going to their left, we're looking at getting depth out of this thing, getting around, somehow getting working towards the target. Again, right here, this little out, something to pay attention to, because later in this video, we'll come into this, where they come in here and hit the little out and up, seven up, everything. But this is a strike. Going to your left, not an easy throw. College, wider hashes. Again, tight turn, downhill. Again, love seeing that from the quarterback. Again, really great structure. But right here, getting downhill, perfect. Come up, strike. That is on the body, on the break, on the sideline. 1-2 hookup. Really nice. Again, come within the pocket. Pistol here. Always looking offhand, ball fake. You know, he goes two-hand right here. Really inconsistent in the whole game, but right here, look at that nice, clean turnaround. Downhill. Strike. More athletic than you probably think right at first glance. He gets outside the pocket, makes some really special throws, some nice runs in this game as well. This is a strike up top. Now, there are a lot of special throws in this game. This is probably one of my favorites. Back shoulder to the field, an absolute strike, knocks the guy over. That's like taking a laser to the chest right there. From the backside here, this is to the field. Wide hashes, harder than just about any throw you'll have to make on Sundays. No. Boom. I mean, that is a perfect back shoulder fade to the field. As good as it gets. Up top, this is just goes on the outside with a little MFR or basic crosser by the number two. And I mean, as soon as you see this type of release to the field where that corner is essentially over the top of him, you're going to get that back shoulder. It's just so much harder getting it to the field. And look when he makes the decision to throw this thing. Back foot hits. I mean, he's throwing it right there. The guy's not to the 10 yet. They're side by side. He throws him open. Now, let's talk lower half mechanics here. Footwork, base. To me, there are elements of toesy, heel clicky. Now, he gets away with it right here, but that's getting close to heel clicky for me. It doesn't mean that you can never throw it straight. It's just the consistency tethered to that is not quite as good as what I would classify his upper body mechanics, the stroke, the kind of equal opposites, horizontal L's, whatever you want to say, from the top up, it's pretty sweet. Footwork, I think, will get better and better, but that is a strike. This one now, this is one of those ones that is a pretty good example for me of some of the questions that I have about Zach Wilson. This is an out up top to the slot. Now, how the hell he gets there, I can't tell you, and I would be fascinated to hear his explanation of it. But this is really just middle field closed, a post and an out. Now, you could make the argument that technically you could rip this thing if it was like a bang eight. But I think when you watch this again, you're kind of going to, you can't help but shake your head a little bit. Because there's a lot going on here. And what I mean by that is we get the middle field player coming from down here at the bottom of the field. So first up, the concept. What's going on concept-wise? This, to me, is a big post. So if it was a what I'm classified as like a bang eight, where like a up and put it right on him, right on the body, kind of like an anticipation throw right here, that's one thing. That's there, in my opinion, versus middle field close. We got middle field close right here. You can fit that ball in there. When he goes to now, it is deep down the field. Big shot over the top. First of all, this wide receiver murders this corner. Come back here, he tries to like peek over his shoulder, spins around. I mean, it's 187 outside the numbers. But the thing that really is crazy about the throw, let's say in the quarterback world, this is just an out and a post, right? Lots of teams run this. The flat defender right here, you normally would never throw an out where the flat defender is outside the stem of the out. You just don't. Like, it's just impossible to do. So when he goes outside the out, so the out is run in here, I personally have never seen this type of throw. So it wraps around the flat defender to the guy on the sideline. So first, let's watch the corner up top with the post. Look at him get twirled. Okay? Hold on, twirl one more time. Okay, that is a nice route. Now let's look at the ball wrapped around the flat defender. I mean, look when he goes to throw it. Like, I don't, this is definitely a see it, throw it type of thing. Like, you just see the space, throw it, but I can't tell if it's just a ridiculously special throw or just kind of like what were you looking at? I think it's probably a little bit of both, really. I mean, it's one of those ones where you're kind of like, wow, I had to watch this like 5 times to say, like, did that really just happen? And there are a number of throws. You know, he's looking right at us now. He's got the arm to just rip it around him, but it really doesn't do it justice from the back end. Just so rare, unicornish, to throw an out around a flat defender like that. Next one here, this is a little quarterback run. Now, if you get the screen, you like it here, throw the screen. If not, we're going to run it. I'm guessing that's what the concept is. The reason I put it on here, again, showing his athleticism, they really don't block this great. The center needs to get up on 44. He doesn't. And really, it becomes a 2-on-1. He makes a linebacker miss and gets in the end zone. So scheme-wise here, and again, this could be just a straight call quarterback run. I'm going to guess it's got an element of like an RSO here, what I'm used to calling this screen. So we're going to block most dangerous, block most dangerous, block most dangerous. And if somebody runs, so he's going to run, but I cut this thing. Now we have numbers, right? Now we have 5 offensive linemen for 5 defenders. So if nobody runs, then we're going to throw the screen. But, okay, that's great. Now he runs, he's out of there. I see you later. But the center here, he needs to get up to this mic. And again, you got to anticipate the mic's going to move, right? They're going to bump. So really, at the end of the day, all said and done, this should be a tackling drill right here versus right here. But really, it's a 2-on-1 because they don't even get to the mic linebacker, which makes it a person rush. I think you can make the argument back here instead of bailing to just kind of get up and give yourself a little bit more time. But then when he gets outside the pocket, so now we're let this thing play. We're now outside the pocket. When he goes to let this thing go, this corner that he's going to throw to, he's by the defender. I think he's trying to get the ball over the top. Even if he's trying to back shoulder it, it dies on him a little bit. But the aggressiveness, the big plays, the throws down the field, I mean, they're impressive. They're infectious. Maybe it's not a wheel. Maybe it's just a flat. Makes it a little bit easier. Turns into a wheel when he scrambles. Makes a little bit more sense design-wise here. So you can see the middle hook in the mesh. You know, if he just steps up in the pocket there, he probably drives the middle hook. Okay, let's get outside the pocket. Down here at the bottom of the screen. You know, that guy's by that defender. He's not going to back shoulder that. He's throwing, in my opinion, trying to throw it up over the top. That's just my take. He might have been trying to back shoulder, and I might not know what the hell I'm talking about, but it doesn't take it away from ridiculous catch, big-time play outside the pocket, massive third-down conversion. Again, just playing it out here, 3-person rush, instead of necessarily bailing, relying on your feet to create a play outside the pocket. Just step up in the pocket. There's no rush. There's no anything. It's a 3-person rush, a triple team with the nose guard. Get up. Nice. Again, this is quite a catch right here. Again, this is why you visit with these guys. This is why you talk through these plays. What are you trying to do here? To me, it's about 15 yards short, and it's a great catch. Halftime, you dig the channel and you haven't already, please subscribe, hit the bell, get the notification, let you know when we go live, when we put out it.
General Grant at his headquarters. understand more about the overlooked role African Americans played in Elizabeth's spy ring, Anna Edwards is searching for the site of a 12-acre vegetable farm owned by the Van Moos.
The city had checkpoints by the military at every one of its exit entrance points.
In order to bring intel through rebel-held territory, Van Moos African American servants must pass through checkpoints between her mansion and her farm.
Yes, sir.
People who would make the journey normally from the house out to the farm would do that as they always had.
That's what all you got. Yes, sir. That's a clue here if you're hungry, sir.
Every day, two of Elizabeth's trusted servants travel to and from the mansion and the farm with something to sell. Milk, chickens, vegetables.
Or the spy ring, that meant that you had a way to go ahead and carry messages.
Some of her slaves would put messages in their shoes.
It was basically a relay system. One person would bring it to the farm, another person would pick it up from there and take it to the next point, and on until I got to City Point.
Elizabeth Van Loo's relay system leads straight to the headquarters of Ulysses S. Grant, commanding general of the entire Union Army.
Enslaved or free black people know the lay of the land very well, so it seems not surprising to find out that they were an intrinsic part of this firing.
In 4 years, no spy for Van Loo's ring has ever been unmasked. But now, the fall of Richmond and the end of the war threaten to blow Elizabeth Van Loo's cover.
Are they going to kiss up yet?
Kiss me.
Frigid air induction heats faster than gas or electric. And spills all for naught.
Wow.
So it's a breeze to clean. Bacon motivation. Fast using your frigid air.
Hi guys, check out this over here. What'd you do?
Tell me how you did it.
Yeah. Get a little closer. That's insane.
That's a different car.
That's the same car?
No.
Yeah, that's before, that's after.
Oh, that's awesome. Make it new with new finish.
My grandfather had an amazing life, but ancestry showed me so much more than I could have imagined. My grandfather was born in a shack in Pennsylvania. His father was a miner. They were immigrants from Italy, and somewhere along the way, that man changed his name and transformed himself into a successful mid-century American man. He had a whole life that I didn't know anything about. He was just my beloved grandpa.
Bring your family history to life like never before. Get started for free at Ancestry.com.
So, Hayden's got this new debit card from Greenlight. It's a KIPP debit card, and you're starting to learn how to use money, how to spend money, and also how to save money. KIPP can download the app, you can download the app. I think you're really going to like this.
A logo can do more than identify your company. It can connect in meaningful ways, energize your team, and inspire your customers. We're for imprint, and we know your logo on the right product can create moments that matter. With 30 years of experience and thousands of products to choose from, we guarantee your order will be right the first time, on time, and for a great price. Be certain that the right moment will matter. Explore thousands of promotional products at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
We love our new home. There's so much space.
We have a guest room now.
But we have ants.
You're slouching again, Judge.
Expired.
Thanks, Aunt Bonnie.
It's a lot of help.
Hope you can keep it clean.
At least GEICO makes bundling our home and car insurance easy.
Which helps us save a lot of money.
Oh, Teddy, did you get my friend request?
Oh, I'll have to check.
Aunt Joni's here.
For bundling made easy, go to GEICO.com.
Hungry Root is here, and I needed it because my fridge is super empty. I'm going to open the box. The exciting part, Hungry Root came through, and my refrigerator is packed.
Richmond falls to the Union. Fleeing rebels set fire to public buildings, tobacco warehouses, and commissary stores.
That is a conflagration. Elizabeth Van Loon sees all this and just breaks her heart.
Amidst all this turmoil, quietly, noiselessly, the federal army entered the city. There were wild bursts of welcome from the Negroes.
The surrender at Appomattox 1 week later marks the end to the bloodiest war in American history. The Union is restored, thanks in no small part to the espionage activities of two nearly invisible women.
After the war, General Grant and his wife paid a visit to Van Loon to thank her for her service.
Ulysses Grant told her that she had given him extremely valuable information. He was very appreciative of that.
But Elizabeth knows if her neighbors ever learn what she did for Grant and the Union, she'll be ruined. They must never find out.
At the end of the Civil War, Elizabeth Van Loon tried to keep secret her espionage activities. She retrieved all her reports and papers from the Union Army after the war and then destroyed them.
Although the cause she believed in emerges victorious, Elizabeth Van Loon's espionage activities have rendered her penniless.
Grant thought she deserved a lot more than she ended up with. When he became president, Grant made Elizabeth Van Loon postmaster of Richmond, which is a very important position.
As for Mary, after the war, she makes her way north and, using a pseudonym, gives public lectures about her wartime experiences.
I go by the name Richmonia Richards.
If you have a woman coming to tell these war stories about infiltrating the Southern White House, that's going to be a draw, for sure.
I went to the Davis house in his absence and applied for Washington.
She describes her incursion into the Confederate White House. But we only have her word.
I can see no evidence in the intelligence materials or anything that came into the Union Army to indicate that there was ever a spy in the Confederate White House.
Douglas Waller visits Richmond's American Civil War Museum in search of proof. As Elizabeth Van Loon lay dying, 35 years after the war, an article published in Richmond revisits Mary's story, prompting local outrage, including for Verena Davis. Historian John Kosky shares a letter that might settle the question.
This is a letter from Verena Davis, the former First Lady of the Confederacy, about some reports that were then circulating that there had been a black spy in the Confederate White House during the war.
It's amazing that this really survived.
Writing over three decades after the war, Verena minces no words.
We never had any such person about us, nor did Miss Van Loon ever hire or offer us any such person. I had no, quote, educated Negro in my household. My maid was an ignorant girl who, I'm sure, cannot read.
That's interesting. So she believes that this is a story that got passed down that wasn't really true.
First of the worst lie in the White House, Verena should be the last person to know.
Yeah.
I tend to believe that she is sincere in her denial, but that her denial doesn't necessarily mean that there wasn't a spy in the White House.
I am not convinced by Verena Davis's denial.
The idea of being outsmarted by a black person was just not conceivable for a lot of people, especially with a black maid.
What Mary did or didn't do during the war has kept scholars hunting for decades. But a brand new piece of evidence surfaced in 2019. Anna Edwards visits the Library of Virginia to examine it.
I think for a long time, there was sort of a school of thought that maybe she had been an invention of, you know, well, here's a good story that this person did this. We can't find any evidence of her, so she never existed.
Archivist Trenton Heiser believes this letter may help solve the mystery.
The connections first. Anybody knows this is the only letter from Mary Jane Richards, known as Mary Bowser, to Elizabeth Van Loon.
By 1870, Mary is intimate tone of this newly discovered letter suggests to some that Mary and Elizabeth might be genetically related.
I think it's possible that she was her sister. I think it's likely that she was related to Elizabeth Van Loo somehow.
She referred to Elizabeth Van Loo as her foster sister, which indicated that she suspected there was some family connection there.
But Mary Bowser really existing and having a close relationship with Elizabeth Van Loo is still not absolute proof that Mary infiltrated the Confederate White House as part of Elizabeth's spy ring.
Of course, you have a letter from Verena Davis who says that she took no slave from Elizabeth Van Loo.
So that would have been a problem.
Author Douglas Waller and historians Anna Edwards and Laura Net Lee debate the legend of Mary in the Confederate White House.
Verena Davis herself later tried to completely debunk the possibility that any black woman could have been that smart.
It seems highly unlikely that the First Lady of the Confederacy would accept a slave from a known Unionist.
I happen to agree that there's just no way that this house is going to accept anyone on the recommendation of a known Unionist.
Perhaps Mary never got a job in the Confederate White House. But unknown to Verena, she may have had access on one occasion.
Mary never acknowledged that she was infiltrated into the White House. What she did say was that one day she went to the Confederate White House.
I was introduced to a private office. When alone, I opened a drawer of the cabinet and searched the papers.
That in itself is a very dangerous operation. I mean, she could have been
killed.
Killed, yes, or given, you know.
So,
you can easily see that if you're trying to infiltrate, there's one moment. You get in, you check it out, it doesn't work out as a full-blown infiltration.
There is no way to know for certain exactly what Mary saw when she was in the Confederate White House. But regardless, just getting in there was a breathtaking accomplishment.
It's a major intelligence coup on her part. This was one of the most successful, if not the most successful, espionage rings in the Civil War.
Today, given all that Elizabeth Van Loo and Mary accomplished, why do they remain so unknown?
I think they definitely would not want a woman's story to come out like that in the immediate aftermath of the war. They didn't want people to think of women in this way.
Women, and particularly black women, were dismissed in such a derogatory kind of way.
How many monuments are there to Confederate generals, white guys? How many monuments are there to Elizabeth Van Loo?
Despite all her accomplishments, Elizabeth's grave in Richmond's Shaco Hill Cemetery remained unmarked until Northern friends installed a stone hauled all the way from Boston.
It's a boulder. There's no other marker like it. And it has a plaque on it.
She risked everything that is dear to man. Friends, fortune, comfort, health, life itself. All for the one absorbing desire of her heart that slavery might be abolished and the Union preserved.
She really did kind of give her all for that.
To this day, there is no monument anywhere for Mary Bowser.
I have a belief in my heart. There's like a secret book about Mary Bowser somewhere that Elizabeth wrote, but we just haven't discovered yet.
Wow. decades, scholars have sought proof that the reports were true.
You're talking about a community of people who were hiding. So they're not trying to have anyone know where they are. They don't want anyone to write their story. You're going to have some difficulty finding those resources.
In the late 1980s, Elaine Nichols led the first archaeological expedition in the Dismal Swamp at a place called Culpeper Island.
One of the biggest problems with the Dismal Swamp is it's like this huge peat bog. And there were stories where Native Americans talked about ways in which you would survive by literally lying on your stomach and sort of swimming through the mud and the bog to be able to get to solid landing.
Elaine's first dig was promising, but ultimately inconclusive.
The challenge was that the site had been disturbed. We found a white family that had lived there probably in the early part of the 20th century. So it meant that there was going to be a mixture of things. It wasn't going to be a pristine site.
Years later, archaeologist Dan Sayers learned about Elaine Nichols' work and decided to venture deeper into the swamp in search of a pristine site.
Coming up to somewhere around mid-thigh or so without knowing the terrain at all was quite daunting. The mud came pretty deep, so you gotta be very careful for physical safety, like twisting legs and all that.
You come nice and straight off that route there.
Trying to get out of here when one is injured would be quite a task.
Today, Dan is leading his field students to the place where he made his first discovery in 2003.
All right, Jordan, anytime you want, just do a water break.
It's over 100 degrees. And the site is a 2-hour slog from the closest access road.
New York, slow down right about here. Alright, this is the location of the first area I excavated. And right before us here is the location of the first post-underground cabin that we discovered archaeologically.
The wooden cabin had long rotted away, but the ground itself preserved evidence of the structure. Dark marks in the dirt reveal what once was there.
We saw a series of posts about the size of a dinner plate. Probably they were raised about a foot or 2 feet above the ground.
These markings in the ground indicated the scale of the cabin, without any physical evidence other than the dark stains in the soil. Sayers had to employ a technique that few archaeologists had turned to before. The process is called optically stimulated luminescence, or OSL for short.
Basically, there are chemical reactions that go on in every grain of sand when the sun is hitting that grain of sand. And when sun is no longer hitting the sand, a different chemical reaction begins to take place at a very even rate. It can be down to within a year, a margin of error.
Tests date the cabin to between 1670 and 1690. The team also searches carefully for any clues about the inhabitants.
The vast majority of what we find is very, very small. We screen our soil. We have 16-inch screens, 16-inch mesh, which is like window screens.
several seasons, Sayers and his team return to search for more.
Starting with that cabin, we worked this whole area, which is about an acre.
Their finds are still astonishing, even over a decade later.
So far, we found elements of at least 11 different cabins. Two of the structures we found seem to be facing each other, so there might have been a common area. Over this area, we see some depressions that may have been water catchment basins. So you had people gathering water from there, clean, filtered water through the sand. They'd have cleared up some of the swamp nearby. They had grown grains and rice and other things like that. They had worked it as a community. So in the middle of the day, they may have been almost all gone, working in the fields, coming back, sitting around the fire, making food, socializing, and so on. It would have been quite a sight.
Somehow, escaped slaves found a way to live free in this forbidding environment. And this was just one of many settlements across the Americas. People who escaped slavery to form their own communities became known as Maroons, a word some scholars believe is derived from the Spanish word Cimarron, meaning wild or untamed. From Florida and Louisiana to Haiti and Central and South America, each settlement is a unique story of resistance against the inhumanity of slavery and a fundamental threat to the social order of the time.
I think as a planter, you would not want anything that would encourage those persons who were in slavery to think about running away, especially if you're imagining that this is property. And for them to steal themselves, to run away, they're removing property from you. It's an asset that they're taking away from you. But again, they're also making a very strong and firm statement to anyone else who's in slavery. You can do this too. It's hard, but you can do it as well. That's not a message that you want to send to your living property.
As Maroon communities grew, so did slaveholder fears of rebellion.
Harvest.com has scoured the earth to find the most listings, and that means the most pet-friendly listings for pet love and renters. So you might say that you brought more joy to more sweet, innocent, and adorable creatures than any other site. With the most listings, you'll most definitely find the most right place on Harvest.com.
Watch out, juice box.
Harvest.com, the most popular place to find a place. There it goes.
The mind is like a muscle. The more you train it, the stronger it becomes. And while the greats master the body, the greats master the mind.
Two medical societies have strongly recommended to doctors to treat acute non-low back muscle and joint pain with topical NSAIDs first. A formulation they recommend can be found in Salon Boss. Salon Boss, it's good medicine.
If you're like 58% of Americans, you don't have a college degree. Why?
It was just a hassle going back and forth to campus.
At Independence University, all classes are online. All the fees and the cost of books. We don't have extra costs. We even give you a new laptop and tablet to keep when you graduate.
4+ years to get a degree?
With us, you could finish in 3. I need a college that cares about me. Caring about students is what we do best. Call 888-213-0320 or visit exploreiu.com.
Vaccines are ready. And so is Walgreens, with pharmacy experts ready to make it easy for you to get it safely for free. Because this is our shot at getting back together.
So, just a silly mistake. I guess I look pretty ridiculous.
No one looks ridiculous, Bob. Progressive is always here for you with round-the-clock service.
Just so you know, next time you could submit a claim with our mobile app.
Cool. Thanks again for rushing over.
Are you kidding? This is what 24/7 protection looks like.
You smell like fish.
Sorry.
I was talking to Jamie.